You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
I go back to Michael Irvin. I called Michael Irvin and I pretended I was Marty Schottenheimer. And I said, I'm going to come down to Miami and work you out. And I show up down there and he says, where's Marty? And I said, well, Marty couldn't make it. Well, man, I ain't working out. So then I start working out the other Miami players. And Irvin's so freaking competitive, which made him great. He said, fuck it, I'm going to come over and work out.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Michael, what a time of year this is. We got the tournament that's about to get underway. I think for those who are listening right now, the tournament is probably already in progress. We got Pro Day season officially. USC Pro Day was where all the NFL folks were at. We had Ohio State Pro Day yesterday, Texas as well, and we'll get some other fun quarterback Pro Days that are coming up in the coming weeks here. But how are we doing today here on this March 21st here? Spring has finally arrived.
I don't know if it's arrived because it's freezing cold in this goddamn city of Ocean City. The wind's coming off the ocean. It constantly reminds me of why when I turned 17 and could get a driver's license, I took that bike that I used to ride across all over this island and put it in the trash because it was enough of that wind. The wind would come in this direction, it'd come in that direction. And I got the wind going to school today. No, you don't. You know, it changes. No, and then you got the wind going home. No, you don't. It changed. So March is such a weird month, but I love it. Don't you love the tournament? I love the stories the tournament brings out, the narrative, you know, the Dan Munson story at Long Beach State. I mean, incredible, right? You know, the games, how they're played, and the reminder of, for me, as somebody who values leadership, studies leadership, I think it gives you a portrait into understanding how to play a specific game and win that game. That's a big Parcells thing, right? Mickey Corcoran, his high school coach, told him that, Bill, there's always a way to win a game. It's your job to figure it out. And I think basketball coaches do a better job of altering the style of play, not their offense or their defense, but their style. You hear them all the time say, well, if this game's in the 50s, we win. If this game's in the 80s, we'll get beat. I think they do that well, and it's something to learn and take into the football world because every game requires a unique style to play to win. So that's what I like most about it. And, you know, you're out there in Vegas. I mean, the last 4 minutes of these games where people have action on both sides is just so good to watch, isn't it?
It's incredible. I mean, you're talking about the last 4 minutes. How about the first 4 minutes where people are betting the first to 10, the first to 15? Betting everything across the board here in Vegas. And, like, just walking in today to the Circa, it's where I do the podcast here in our Circa studio, there's energy. And, like, usually I come in, it's like 6:50, 7 o'clock in the morning. You know how it is. You've been here. It's a little bit quiet and some stragglers at the craps table or something like that. But more often than not, it's quiet. But today, folks are in there. They're live. They're already lined up at the window, getting their bets in. There's energy as we're a couple hours away from tip-off to the start of the tournament.
You know, last year when I was out there and I came in when we did the show on Saturday morning and I came in at 6 in the morning and we saw the walk of shame leaving the place. You know, it's like this place, it was alive at 6 a.m., right? It was alive. I love walking into Circa at 6 in the morning and a guy sitting there sipping his beer, still playing the slots. It's like, whoa, this is a life I never want to live here. This is something I never want to do. But
breakfast
it's exciting.
Of champions.
I mean, you can't, yeah, I mean, this is truly, you can't, I mean, I don't even think Henry Hill could get a table at Circa today. I mean, it's a hard one to get.
Yeah, no, I'll be perusing around here after we do the podcast, taking it in stuff. Since I'm already here, might as well stay when the atmosphere is at its best, once the games get underway here. But obviously, we're a football podcast. Let's talk some football here, Michael. We saw the pro day for one Caleb Williams, the presumptive number one overall pick yesterday at USC. The Bears contingency was out there. I saw a picture of Eberflus shaking Caleb Williams' dad's hand. Keenan Allen's dapping up Caleb Williams. Like, there's a lot of people. Like, the Bears, there's nothing to hide anymore. They've already traded Fields. There's nothing to hide, and it sounds like we're headed towards Caleb Williams being a pick number one overall when we start drafting these players next month.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the fact that they spent, what, 3 days? They've been out there for 3 days. I think they spent a lot of time. And look, Caleb Williams is really a good player. There's some things that he doesn't do well. You know, he's got 30 fumbles. There's times where you watch him and you wonder some of his decision-making, you know, that he tries to force a play down the field. But for the most part, there's a lot to like. His arm strength, I would say, is above average. I wouldn't call it a rifle, but I think it's certainly good enough, right?
Yeah.
And it all comes down to the intangibles. Can he make the rest of the team better? And I think those 3 days before the workout, because these workouts are ridiculous for the quarterbacks in the offseason. They're all scripted. You know, they're all about making sure that the ball never touches the ground. And so that you're really not going to learn anything in the workout that you can't learn on the tape. It's the conversations with the kid. The fact that Keenan Allen went there, to me, says a lot, right? Mm. Keenan Allen, what people don't realize about pro players is they watch games too, right? They admire other players. And I think his presence there indicates that he has respect for the game that he's seen Williams play. And that's kind of important. You got to have that credibility walking in the locker room.
Yeah, and Caleb Williams said after the pro day, said that, hey, yeah, Keenan Allen and I, we've had a little bit of a relationship since both of them playing football in Los Angeles, Allen with the Chargers, Caleb Williams at USC the past couple years. So I'm assuming they've crossed paths. I don't know if they've, maybe, who knows, they maybe have trained together. But Keenan Allen showed up. You don't oftentimes see veteran guys showing up to pro days that are not their alma mater. Like, we saw C.J. Stroud yesterday at the Ohio State pro day, which makes sense. He's rooting for his guys. Those were his teammates a couple years ago. But Keenan Allen, he went to Cal. He didn't go to USC, and he shows up at the USC pro day, and he said, hey, like, he wanted to go out there and support Caleb Williams. So it's kind of leading towards this Caleb Williams being the first overall pick for the Chicago Bears. But you mentioned how these pro days, because it's so scripted, what these guys do, you're not going to really gain anything from this. I guess, what is the purpose of these? Because at Ohio State, we saw Marvin Harrison Jr. say, hey, I'm not doing any of the workouts. I'm not running. I'm not doing anything. Like, you can meet with me. We can talk, but I'm not doing anything. Are pro days as we know it going to end, or is there still going to serve a purpose for some of the mid-tier prospects that are going to be day two, day three guys?
I mean, the 1% that refuse to work out and do things is different than everybody else. There are other people competing for jobs, competing for a draft status, right? And so they got to show what they can do in a workout. You know, Harrison's a unique player. He's in a kind of a special category, although there are other receivers that people like, maybe not as much as maybe you could have. I think everybody's receiver board will look different. Mm-hmm. You know, I think some teams could have Neighbors first. Some teams could have Harrison. Again, this doesn't mean they're not good players. It just means there's a different value that you place on the skill set. So Harrison's got a lot of tape you can look at. He caught balls last year for C.J. Stroud in that workout, so you could see him actually do that. But there's a lot to watch on the tape. He plays at a high level of competition, so you could see that. You wish he would run a 40. You wish he would do those things. But I think at the end of the day, you know, he's got the leverage to say he doesn't want to do it. We'll see how it works out. If Neighbors goes ahead of him, just hypothetically say, you know, he may regret that decision. He may. But I think he's confident in his game. And I think great players, what I've always noticed about great players is they don't mind working out. You know, I go back to Michael Irvin, right? I mean, I called Michael Irvin and I pretended I was Marty Schottenheimer. And I said, I'm going to come down to Miami and work you out. Now, this is 1987, 88, right? So there's no cell phones. There's no none of that. There's no chats and FaceTime and all that crap. So he couldn't tell my voice from the man on the moon. He could have, you know. So, hey, I'm Marty Schott. I did my best Jim Rockford, right? I pretended I was somebody I wasn't. This is what I learned at Hofstra, how to be Jim Rockford. So I did my Jim Rockford routine, and I show up down there. And I'm going to work him out on what we had. This machine was called the box. And so it was a measuring tool to change a direction. And he says, where's Marty? And I said, well, Marty couldn't make it. Well, man, I ain't working out. Okay. All right, you sure? So then I start working out the other Miami players. And Irvin's so freaking competitive, which made him great. He said, fuck it, I'm going to come over and work out. I'm doing it. I'll show you what I can do. And he did. And so to me, that's what I loved about it. That's a little bit of, and we're going to get into this in the second part of this pod, is there is a kind of a this competitive drive in great players. And if you read the Wright Thompson piece yesterday on Caitlin Clark, I mean, that gene she has in her body is what great players have. It's that competitive, I'm going to kick everybody's butt at anything I do.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, they're junkies for what they do. Like, Caitlin Clark is a junkie for basketball. Like, Michael Irvin was a junkie for football. And that's kind of where I would – and, like, this is not to disparage Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, we obviously watched him play at Ohio State. He's terrific. And there's probably nothing that he could do at his pro day that would sway your opinion either way wherever you fall on Marvin Harrison Jr. But – the great players, like you mentioned, don't you just love football? Like, isn't this just fun to you? And any chance that you get to go out and run routes and catch passes, wouldn't you jump at that opportunity, especially when you're doing it in front of NFL people? Like, I would be like, hey, like, this is my love. This is what I love doing. I get a chance to do this and put on the show. Like, let's go ahead and do this thing. Like, who cares if I can't really improve my quote-unquote draft stock? Like, I just love the sport, so I want to go out there and put on a show.
Yeah, I think to me that was you know, that was something that you want, right? And so, like, look, I'm often reminded of the I think it was the, let me think, I want to say it was the 99 draft, okay? And in the 99 draft, Tim Couch was the first pick, right? Donovan McNabb was the second. Akili Smith was the third. And everybody thought Ricky Williams was the universal number one running back in the league, yep. Right? Everybody thought that. No, nobody debated that, except the Colts and Bill Polian, who took Edgerrin James ahead of them.
Yeah.
Right? And so, which shocked everybody, right? And then, of course, the Saints did one of the disastrous trades that Mike Ditka could do, and he traded everything away to get Ricky. But the reason they did that was James fit their offense better in the passing game. He was more adaptable to what they wanted to do with Peyton and how they spread the field as opposed to Ricky. And I think it took everybody by surprise. It didn't take people in the league by surprise because I think everybody's running back board had it a little bit different, right? Some might have had Ricky, some might have had Edgerrin. And I think that's the receiver board. Now, you know, will that change where Harrison gets drafted? I doubt it. But Neighbors is a really good player, you know, and I think there's people are going to give him a lot of attention. And I think Harrison's a really good player. But my point here is sometimes you just don't know where the boards line up. Would the workout move them a little bit up? Probably if he did it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I remember being a kid watching that draft. They're like, I mean, we'd all seen college football that season. Ricky Williams wins the Heisman Trophy at Texas. Like, he's the best running back in the country. I mean, the Eagles fans were booing the Donovan McNabb pick because they wanted Ricky Williams at two.
Oh, yeah.
They were booing that pick. They said, why didn't we draft Ricky? And then Edgerrin James, I'm like, wait, what? Edgerrin James? Because I didn't watch that much Miami at the time. I was surprised, but obviously he went on to have a Hall of Fame career. Ricky Williams is a really good running back, didn't quite make the Hall of Fame, but it's fascinating, I think, the decision to work out or not work out. In Harrison's defense, he said, I guess according to Albert Breer, who tweeted this out yesterday, he asked the 9 teams that he met with in Indianapolis at the Combine if they needed to see anything at the Pro Day. They all said no, so he was like, all right, well, if they don't need to see anything, I'm going to go ahead and stand on my film, and maybe I'll just do some individual stuff for the visits. But, yeah, I don't know. It raises some eyebrows to me, especially when
I
you don't want
to. I find that hard to believe 9 teams said no. I find it hard to believe 9 teams said no way workout. I find that, you know,
Let's talk about it more on the other
Lion
side.
Lion season.
Cover your ass season next here on GM Shuffle. Look, we've all been there when we've had to make a tough decision in a short amount of time. I mean, if you're trying to go out and get tickets to a concert or to a football game, and it's last minute, you're trying to get the best deal, you don't know where to look, and you ultimately end up on a decision that's a little bit lackluster. Well, our friends at ZipRecruiter take that out of the hiring process. When you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. I mean, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for that position. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So, Michael, you're calling BS on this story of 9 teams all saying no. If we don't need to see you work out, we'll just watch some Big Ten Network footage of Marvin Harrison Jr. Why are you skeptical?
Everybody wants to watch you work out.
That's what I figured.
Because everybody wants to watch you work out. We all want to see it, right? I'm not saying we got to. I agree that we have abused the workouts, right? I agree with the player's point of view on that. You know, this constant, you know, if you work out at the combine, now we got to come work you out again. I mean, we've abused it. There's no question we've abused that. And I agree, one for all and all for one. That I understand. It's like the reason we're in this mess in player development in the league is because we abused the offseason program to where we worked the players so much they got CBA rights within the new CBA, and that eliminated the offseasons. I get that, and I understand it. But to me, you never turn down an opportunity to watch a great player work out. Never, because he teaches you something. He teaches you something. You can see, one of the things that Al Davis was obsessed about when it came to receivers was, it, just say you're a wide receiver and you line up on the right side of the formation, okay, to the defensive left, to the right side, and you run a curl pattern, which is you go 12 yards and you curl back in. Davis was obsessed with that left hand. Where was the left hand when you pivoted? Okay, was it tucked close to your body? Was it not moving very much? Did you have incredible body control? Because if it's flinging all around and you can't, and you have to, it's like you're waving to the defender, I'm turning here,
yep.
Right? I'm turning here. And the defender reads it. And so that's all the little details that you want to kind of see within the workout that you would love to. And Harrison, you can see it on tape. He's got really tight hands to his body, and his hands are outstanding, but you still never turn it down. Like, I find it hard. Look, you can't get 9 NFL teams to agree on instant replay. You can't get 9 NFL teams to agree on, you know, what is pass interference. You're going to get 9 to agree that Marvin, no, don't work out, Marvin, no big deal. I mean, that's a bad precedent to set, because what becomes 1 might be 3 next year. Now, we all understand that, you know, the competitive fire that burns within helps people that work out. But to me, I think I just don't understand. I'm not saying Albert's lying. I just don't believe it.
Yeah. I don't believe whoever's telling him that stuff. I think it's something's going on there. And like I said, like, this is not to disparage Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm sure he's going to have a terrific career. But like, I see Kool-Aid McKinstry, the Alabama cornerback who has a Jones fracture and is about to have surgery next week, running the 40 at the Alabama Pro Day. I'm like, yeah. Hey, like that. You see that, and then you see that it's. It raises some eyebrows, at least for me, when I'm looking at some of these prospects. They're not to call out his character or anything like that, but I'm just like, hey, like if you're a great player, don't you just love ball? Like, if you love ball, go out there and perform. That was our whole spiel during the combine when the quarterbacks weren't throwing, and I was talking about how C.J. Stroud and Richardson and Levis, those guys threw last year, and we saw Penix and Nix throw this year. It's like, hey, like, guys who love ball, just let's go out and compete. Let's throw this thing. Let's go ahead and do it. And I don't know. Maybe it's a different generation. Maybe I'm getting old. Is what's happening here.
Good point.
Yeah, could be that.
It is a different generation. That lends us into a whole conversation about the generation, right? And I think it lends us into the Kenny Pickett thing. I know we want to talk about some of the other quarterbacks in this draft.
No, but let's do Pickett here.
To me, that lends us into the Kenny Pickett conversation about. You know, there's a good book coming out, and my friend Ed Smith wrote a review of it in the New Statesman. It's called The Anxious Generation, and Jonathan Haidt, he's on, and you can listen to him on Joe Rogan. He's on there. He's written a book about how big tech has taken away competitiveness in people, and what he does is, and he's a psychologist at NYU, so he's not making this stuff up, but the advent of the smartphones has basically put generations into two categories. The play-based childhood, which you and I probably grew up in, which is your mom said, go outside and play.
Yep.
You know, you ain't staying in the house. Go outside and play with your friends. Go to North Street Park and go play. Like every time I walk by North Street Park, I have a memory from my childhood of being in that, being in the North Street, right? You know, and you played. And when my mother rang a bell, you came home. It was time to go to dinner if you didn't want to, you know, and she would, you know. So, and then now today is we have a phone-based childhood where a lot of the kids are staying inside playing on their phones and they're not learning the mistakes. They're not developing their competitive nature, right? They're just doing their thing. And he attaches it to this incredible study that they did in the 80s over the artificial ecosystem that was created. And basically what the designers discovered that many trees grew only to fall over before maturity. So this is a controlled environment to grow trees. And so what they asked themselves, what was missing? Well, wind. Under the stress of wind, tree roots have to grow stronger. Wood cells have to develop extra hardness, and it altered the state of stress wood. And so stress wood is the competitive nature you learn from being a childhood-based person. And when I read that Kenny Pickett feels like he did the right thing and that he doesn't want to compete, I'm like, wait a second. That's so screwed up. That goes against everything I believe in as a competitor. And for me as an Eagle, if I were on the Eagles, I would be wondering, like, is he going to compete for us, or is he going to be one of those phone-based childhood kids who's going to say, well, it's getting too hard, I got to go home now? Yeah. Like, I don't understand how you go from being a competing for a starting job to settling. Settling's the key word here, to be Jalen Hurts' backup and feel like you did something really good. I mean, what do we have as quote?
Yeah, we can play the soundbite right now. We have it queued up here. Here's Kenny Pickett on his exit from Pittsburgh.
I think the communication, you know, is what it is. It was behind closed doors. You know, I'm confident in the way that I handled it. I handled it the way I should have handled it. You know, I'm excited to be here. It worked out so well that Philly was the place I ended up landing in. So I think everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
You're a former first round pick. This is now entering year three. Where you're supposed to be is being a backup. Is what
he decided. You're a career backup. I mean, he should have took a clipboard to the press conference. He should have just carried a clipboard into the press conference. And he thinks he handled it well. Now, maybe something happened behind closed doors that I don't know. You know, it's the great Alba Barisi's line. I don't want to go into the unknown, not knowing. Maybe I don't know something here in the unknown. But to me, on the surface, this looks extremely bad because here he is, having an opportunity to be a starting quarterback, competing against Russell Wilson. I don't care what they told Russell Wilson. I could care less. He's on a minimum salary contract. They could cut him tomorrow. It's no big deal. If I beat him out, right, I'm the starter. And so, therefore, why would I? And then I have my fifth-year option they might have to pick up. Now, there is no fifth-year option. Now you're going to go in. And I don't care what anybody tells me. The locker room knows there is a level of lack of competitiveness, right? They know it. They understand it. I mean, they see it, right? And that's what was interesting. So it's kind of like I saw two worlds here. I read the Wright Thompson column on Caitlin Clark and about her competitive nature and about how she's still pissed off that UConn didn't recruit her coming out of high school and about how she just is trying to control her competitive ways through her teammates and how she's learning it. And she has that loneliness about her because nobody understands what she's trying to do, to Kenny Pickett saying, I did the right thing. I'm glad, happy to be a backup. I mean, I can't get my – and if I were Howie Roseman, deep down, I would worry about, if we got to play this guy for seven games, is he going to be competitive enough?
Wouldn't make you feel that good. And I'm sure where Kenny Pickett comes from with this whole thing is that he feels like – I'm sure that he feels like he was lied to by the Pittsburgh Steelers, that he said, oh, these guys lied to me. All of a sudden now they've, quote unquote, recruited over me and they brought Russell Wilson in. But there's, like you said, there's two paths that you can go once that happens where you feel like you're lied to. You can either go the Kenny Pickett route of saying, get me the hell out of here. F it. I don't care. I don't want anything to do with this organization. Or you can say, well, I'm going to prove them wrong. I'm going to make them look stupid for signing Russell Wilson. I'm going to go in there in training camp, outplay this guy, and be the starting quarterback for week one. And he chose the other path to where, I mean, I guess he felt that these guys don't value me if they're going to go ahead. And this obviously goes back to the Mason Rudolph thing, the Seattle game when Kenny Pickett was healthy enough to play, and they said, we're going to stick with Mason Rudolph. So he's like, okay, that was strike one for me. Now this was strike two and three or something like that, for, I guess, is how he thinks about this. And I don't know. Maybe he thinks that he couldn't convince them. Maybe Tomlin told him that, hey, you're never going to be the starter here. But I feel like there's a way that on the field that you can make it prove these guys wrong. And if the players around you believe, hey, Kenny's the guy, why are we playing with Russ? I think ultimately that they would go back to you, since they have more sweat equity invested in Kenny Pickett, since he was their first round pick. And like you mentioned, Russell Wilson is on a minimum contract.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I'm not disputing that he may be in lie to. And again, I'm just questioning the makeup, right? Now, I think when you listen to, you know, this is what makes the tournament so much fun. When you listen to Dan Hurley talk about how he coaches, when you listen to Dan Hurley and the players, how they respond, when you listen to what Gronk said yesterday about, you know, this ridiculous Dynasty documentary that's on Apple that is completely eliminated the greatest coach of all time from having anything to do with the six titles. I mean, it's remarkable how you can just erase it like that. I've not watched one bit of it. I've had zillions of texts about it. I don't know how you can erase his impact on the team like the Kraft family has been able to do, but that's their right. They produce the videos, so they have every right to tell the story they want to tell. But once again, it's their story, right? So, like, I don't know how you can separate it. Like, what drives players, Hurley, the players all say he made me better, right? Gronk comes out and says, look, we would have never gotten to where we were if it wasn't for him. McCourty, Rodney Harrison, all these guys are complaining now, which now it just takes, you know, it makes it look so bad. It makes it look so bad. And I think, to me, this is where, if I were, I think Kenny Pickett, he could be happy with himself, but through the lens of other competitors, I don't know if they're going to see it that way.
And that's one thing to where I think for folks to understand, like, the person who's the leader, whoever, it's the head coach or it's the boss at your job or what have you, their job is not to be your best friend. And I think that's something that a lot of people have trouble squaring up with. Like, it's like the Barry Switzer quote that I always say all the time, like, hey, like, we're not going out for RC Colas, because it's true. Like we don't have to be best friends to be successful. And then maybe, I'm sure there was times where those guys in the locker room in New England were MFing Bill and all that stuff. I'm like, man, can you believe this guy? What the hell? But eventually they see the results and say, you know what? Looking back on it, I'm glad it was that he did what he did. I'm glad he did it the way that he did it. Right. And I'm glad that we had that success. Like, it doesn't have to be kumbaya, like you said.
And to dismiss it as if he wasn't even there and gloss over it. See, you gain no credibility when you do that. It's like if I came on this pod and said we never made a mistake. Of course we make them. That's how we learn.
Exactly. That does it for us here on the DK Network. For our podcast audience, we'll keep rolling on with some of the draft stuff. But for DK Network, we'll see you guys on Monday with more from the NFL. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. I mean, we have a plethora of games to bet on. You can bet on game by game, totals, sides, series props, conference finals MVP, NBA finals MVP, whatever you want. DraftKings has it. So all you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, let's have the J.J. McCarthy conversation here, Michael, because I feel like J.J. McCarthy is getting set to be one of the more polarizing prospects here in this 2024 draft prospect. Because I think initially, about a few weeks ago, a month ago perhaps, we started to hear whispers of, okay, there could be maybe four quarterbacks in the top 10. And people were saying, who's the fourth quarterback? Is it Penix? Is it Nix? It's like, no, it's actually Michigan's J.J. McCarthy. And then everybody who's watching college football all offseason or all fall is like, oh, how could J.J. McCarthy ever be a top pick? How could he ever be a first-round pick? But it appears that the NFL likes McCarthy more than those of us who just are sitting on Twitter on Saturday afternoons watching Michigan play football. Is what you're hearing, does that match up with what you've seen when you study McCarthy on tape? Because I know we saw the hype for Will Levis during the process last year, but you were very early on saying that doesn't match what I see on tape. This is a 5'9 player. This is a guy who's a backup. This is a guy I would not take in the first round. And ultimately, it was all a bunch of smoke with Will Levis. He ended up being the first pick of the second round. When you watch McCarthy, does what you see on tape match up with what you're hearing amongst people throughout the NFL?
Well, I think there are two divergent thoughts here on McCarthy. I think people, you know, first of all, I think you have to grade this in a unique way. And the great Tony Lucadella, and I wrote about this in Gridiron Genius, the baseball scout who founded Mike Schmidt, you always refer back to what he said. And there's four kind of scouts. And we are in the arena now of four kind of scouts. We have the poor scout, like the guy that thinks Justin Fields is better than 15 quarterbacks in the league. We'll put him as a poor scout, right? And then you have the production scout, the scouts who grade the production, the completions, right? And they have that. And then you have the picking scout, the scout that picks on one thing the player can't do. And then the projection scout, where the guy can project him moving forward to what the offense could do. And I think there lies the difference, because if you grade McCarthy's production accuracy, you know, timing, some of the things he does, he's not going to win you. And that's where the most of the fans are. They're in that production category. Although I don't, you know, when it comes to Fields, nobody's in. There's no production, but they're there anyway. But that's a whole other situation. But the projection people, the people that see the McCarthy athleticism and the intangibles that he brings to the table, let's not confuse that you can get drafted in the first round as a quarterback because you have elite intangibles. We've seen it all time and time again, right? We've seen it. We'll fix him. He's a hard worker. We'll work on it. He'll get better. I fell for it with Mac Jones. Look, I fell completely hook, line, and sinker on it. You know, I thought he was going to be an overachiever mentality. I thought he was going to have that enemy. You know, I thought he was going to be the, you know, the outdoor play kid. And instead he became the, you know, he became the inside play kid, right? You know, he became the so, like, I just felt like that I was wrong. I was wrong on all that. And you get, and we all get lured into this. And I think the more you watch McCarthy, you got to have a clear vision about the things you can correct with him and the things you can't. Like, I think Bo Nix is more ready to be that athletic player, that guy that can do the things that everybody's saying McCarthy can do. And I think Bo Nix is really, I don't want to call it hot, but I think he's viewed in a light that's very positive with teams. And I'm not saying McCarthy isn't, but I think there's that whole aurora, the whole sense of his character. Plus what Jim said about him, he's the best quarterback ever to play at Michigan. It's hard to document that, but Harbaugh said it. Now, one question for you. Did you buy anything at the Harbaugh garage sale? I heard you were back there.
I saw that on Twitter the other day, which is hilarious. I mean, that's just as old school as it gets right there. Hey, we're just having an open garage sale. Come buy some stuff.
I hope he donated the money to somebody. I pray that he did that. Please tell me he did. I mean, I saw he was selling. Millie's like, he's selling Michigan gear there. Like, how could he do that? He just got that for free. I'm like, well, I don't know. I pray he gave it to a donor. I mean, I pray he gave every nickel to somebody.
It just pockets it. You got to stock up some money to buy those $2 steaks. You know, that's what you got to do if you're Jim Harbaugh. But I find it very interesting, though, for this J.J. McCarthy conversation, because now we're starting to hear teams, not necessarily linked to him, but teams that are going on visits and meeting with him, one of them being the New York Giants, who have been sniffing around quarterbacks this whole offseason. They brought Russell Wilson in for a surprise visit that nobody really saw coming. That's how we all saw Russell Wilson at the Newark airport. And then now they have visited and met with J.J. McCarthy, and they're doing a top 30 with him. Then also the Minnesota Vikings are scheduled to meet with J.J. McCarthy as well and have some dinner with him when he goes ahead and does his pro day. So it seems like teams who might be trading up into the top five or might currently be near the top five are interested in this guy, which would lend all of us on the outside to believe, hey, J.J. McCarthy is going to go higher than what people thought, at least at the start of this draft process. Maybe this is a guy who ends up going in the top six.
Well, you know, that's a hard one to figure out, right? Because do you have to go up to get him? Look, I think where McCarthy, I think McCarthy piques people's interest is his third down tape, where he was very effective. And one of the, you know, when you go through all the, what I call the alerts of the quarterback position, one of the alerts is critical play in the game. Will he have the ball in his hands? Can he make a play? What's his third down quarterback rating? Watch all the third down plays. And McCarthy moves up the ladder in these categories, right? So there's alerts that you look for, you know, on the quarterback that highlight him. And I think Nix does the same thing. So, you know, between I haven't heard much about Penix, but between Daniels and then Drake May is out there. And everybody, when you watch Drake May, first of all, if you can get past North Carolina's pass protection schemes, God bless you. Because I get frustrated watching Drake May because, like, we've got a six-man protection and we don't block the guy. I don't know if it's him not pointing it out, if they don't have it. It's frustrating. Like, it's really frustrating. And I got to get past it because I'm starting to watch grade the offense as opposed to grading the player, which becomes a disaster for scouts. Yeah. Exactly, right? And so, you know, and May's all over the place. May is the golfer who sprays the ball but has talent. Now, everybody says he's a great kid, and he meets all these intangibles in terms of that. But I'm still going through all of that. And I think, to me, one of the things I want to do is go back and look at these kids, their high school tapes, right? Mm. Because I think what you see in high school is how many incompletions do they throw, right? That's a key number. Because in high school, there's really not a lot of pro players on the field. And, you know, like Sam Darnold averaged almost 10 incompletions a game coming out of college, coming out of high school. That's a lot. That's a lot. That means the ball wasn't in great locations, you know, and he didn't give, you know, there's some things that it's the receiver's fault, but it's also some things his fault. So I think you got to kind of look at that. And I got to really go back and study. Everybody's linking the Drake May conversation to Minnesota because of Josh McCown coached him in high school. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I could see McCarthy being somebody Minnesota was interested in. I could see Bo Nix being somebody was interested in. I would think, like, if you're from the Walsh school, which essentially these guys are from, right, I think that Bo Nix would be very appealing to all the people from the Walsh school, the Sean Paytons, the Kevin O'Connells, those kind of guys.
So when you go back, two things there, because I'm interested in the high school aspect. Like, do teams do that a lot for prospects, or is it just at the quarterback position that they go back and watch some of that high school tape? But then on the Bo Nix part of it, because the knock on Bo Nix, as somebody who was invested in Bo Nix, for our Lombardi Line listeners, you know what felt about Bo Nix during the college football season, but people knocked him for being a checkdown artist. Look at the yards per completion, yards per attempt. It's lower. It's like 7.5, 8, which is low for college football standards. He wasn't necessarily pushing the ball down the field. A lot of the yardage that he acquired was from yards after the catch. Is that something that, like, how do you sort of, I guess, decipher through the tape and, like, kind of, okay, is it the offense that was making him successful? Because what was going on in Auburn? And is this a guy that projecting forward can actually run an NFL offense and we can make explosive plays? Or is he sort of just the quote-unquote game manager? Like, how do you kind of square up all of that stuff that's surrounding Bo Nix?
Well, I think you got to watch the tape and see, did he turn down a throw? Is the ball coming out? Like, you see so many times, like with Carr, he gets rid of the ball too quick to let the play develop. Like, he's panicking. He's playing fast. When you play fast, your yards per attempt is always down, right? That's why Daniel Jones never can get the ball up the field, because he's playing – he doesn't play slow. Remember, you want to be quick-minded, right? You want to be quick-minded but play slow. You want to be able to know what to do with the football, and that allows the play to develop, right? And you got to be able to not panic in the – oh, I got to get this ball out of here. I got to throw it, right? And then you're taking the check down immediately. Wait a minute. Just let the play develop. Give it some time. There's no pressure. Step up in the pocket, vertically work the pocket, and throw the ball here. Now, you know, for me, standing on the sidelines, and for you, that's a lot easier said than done. That's an innate trait that comes with playing the position. You know, it's a little bit like, you know, when I was at that Vail conference, John Foley, who was in the Blue Angels. I mean, you know, they can teach you how to fight, how to train, and put a plane on an aircraft carrier. But it's a lot harder to do it real than it is in the simulator, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. You know, wait, be patient, see it. It's going to happen. It's kind of like, you know, it's like great players can't tell you why they threw the ball to the player in basketball. Caitlin Clark can't really understand why she saw somebody was going to be open. She just knew it. I think that's a hard quality to have. It's as I've said many times, it's a crib thing. You come and you either have it at birth or you don't.
The ability to sort of process things quickly in the midst of chaos, like that's something that's sort of an innate ability. It's hard. Like you can get better at, I guess, seeing stuff by preparing and all that, but being able to just feel that stuff innately and processing. Last thing on the New York right. Giants, though, before we wrap up here, because I do want to ask you that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't get on them. I'm sorry. I didn't. I mean,
look, they've been sniffing around. So, like, how are they taking they not a quarterback?
How could they not be sniffing? I mean, you know, at some point they have to come to the Jesus meeting and say Daniel's not the guy. Or else, I mean, we've been through how many coaches, how many offenses? I mean, I told Daboll when he went there, I mean, you're going to have to figure – the first your job when you walk in that building is to solve the quarterback. And if you wait, it could be too long. It's too long. We've all made this mistake, right? When Norv came into the Raiders, you know, oh, well, we'll bring Rich back or we'll sign Kerry. No, we should have drafted a quarterback, right? These are all messages you learn through experience, not through second guessing. It's just all the mistakes you make in the league that you learn from. Like, either we fix this now or it ain't getting fixed. Like, you know, and you could say what you want. Look, I didn't want to pick Anthony Richardson wherever the Colts did, but put Anthony Richardson in this draft. Where would he rank if he had another year? Right? Where would he rank? And at least give the Colts credit. Now, they went through a bunch of quarterbacks, but at least they picked a guy in Shane Steichen's first year, and it sets them on a trajectory.
And that's probably why we're going to see quarterbacks maybe go 1, 2, 3, 4. We'll talk about the Arizona Cardinals and where they fall into this on Monday's podcast, because they hold that 4th overall pick, which has been projected to Marvin Harrison for the Cardinals. But if Minnesota, if the Giants, if one of those teams comes up and says, hey, we want to get to 4 because we want to go ahead and get our guy, whether it's Jaden Daniels, if it's J.J. McCarthy or Drake May, whoever, maybe the Cardinals go ahead and move down and we see quarterbacks go in the first 4 picks in the NFL draft. That does it for this edition of the GM Shovel. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. As always, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Michael, I will talk to you on Monday. Be well, man.
Good luck with the tourney.